It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
And we're coming live for the Built for Tough Studio. Boomer Esiason, Greg Giannotti. It's Boomer and Geo on the Fan simulcast across the country on CBS Sports Network. And wherever you are in the free Odyssey app, good Tuesday morning. Hope you had a wonderful long weekend. Things were looking bleak on Sunday night. The faith was down. The faith that I had even after they blew the lead in game one was dwindling. Jalen Brunson wasn't contributing. I thought that they might even get swept in the series. And then none other than Karl Anthony Towns puts on the Superman cape. And this guy plays the best quarter he has played in a Knicks uniform by far, by miles. Took over that game. Did everything we've been asking him and wanting him to do. This entire year, and now you have 2-1, of course, with game four tonight, the critical game four. We'll get into some of the baseball as well, but it is a Knicks day once again. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Jim. Doing great. And one of the things about this game on Sunday night was two things. One is unselfishness, and two is defense. And the unselfishness, first and foremost, starts with Josh Hart. He basically went to Tom Thibodeau and said, look, maybe you should start Mitchell Robinson. Let me come off the bench. We're going to play the same amount of minutes. It doesn't really matter to me whether or not I start or I don't start. And Tom Thibodeau said, yeah, sure, I agree. And that's the unselfishness. And that's one of the reasons I think all of us really, truly respect Josh Hart. I mean, you can say whatever you want. He's not a great shooter. We know that. But he is the Energizer Bunny. He truly is. A guy who plays on both ends of the court. He gets rebounds. He gets steals. He'll set guys up. He'll set the picks. He'll do all the dirty work. And in this case, it's the unselfishness of him. You know, how many NBA basketball players, honestly?
98% of them.
Are not going to do that. So
yeah.
I give him a lot of credit for the unselfishness of allowing Tom Thibodeau to do what he did with Mitchell Robinson. And then number two, I think it really comes down to two guys that, you know, we very rarely ever talk about. And this is the defensive end of it. And this is, you know, and this is DeLong Wright and Landry Shamet.
Yeah, who are out there a ton. I mean, it's incredible. You would have thought with the Knicks with their backs against the wall, if you would have told me that those guys would have been out on the floor as much as they were and they came back and won that game, would have told you were nuts.
Well, and the point being is that they both played about, you know, 12 or 13 minutes each. And they both brought defense. They both brought energy. They both brought, like they wanted to have an impact on the game. And these guys, they're not rookies. I mean, these guys have been around for a while. They know what they're doing. As long as you don't turn the ball over and you're not out there, you know, flailing all over the place and you're playing tough defense, you know, so you have these two players who rarely play and you have Josh Hart, you know, taking a seat on the bench to start the game. And then all of a sudden, you're realizing that, you know, all right, so Jalen Brunson's not playing his best game, and certainly wasn't. But at the end of the game, when it matters the most, who are the two guys that score the last 8 points? It's Brunson and it's Hart.
Yeah, at the free throw line, and making those were critical, put them to bed, the Pacers. That I'm glad you brought that up because it kind of gets lost in the Towns fourth quarter, that those guys on the line just buried the Pacers.
Right. And, you know, so you had the last 8 points scored by Brunson and Hart. Brunson had that 12-footer that put them up 100-98. And then you had six straight free throws from Hart and then Brunson.
Yeah.
So four by Hart, two by Brunson, game over. Everybody walks off. And it really is a very satisfying win for a lot of reasons. And the reasons is that the two guys came off the bench and played defense. So he goes nine deep. And Kenny Smith at halftime said he wouldn't play nine games, got players in a baseball game. And then, of course, the two most important guys or the two guys that have led this resurgence of the Knicks in Brunson and Hart come through huge at the end of the game. So, hey, they live to play another day. I mean, they play better on the road than they do at home. I think they're just sick and tired of all the goddamn celebrities at home. They hate playing in front of these people, and they just rather get away from all of that and go play defense and figure out a way to win on the road, which is really, there's something to be said about that. When you go on the road, it's you and your teammates. That's it. You know, and they have certainly answered the call in that regard, and I would suspect that they'll answer the call again tonight.
Yeah, I mean, they've had a couple of great wins at home, but yes, they have been over the course of the postseason. They've been better on the road, so I'm not worried that they're going to be overwhelmed by the Pacers tonight. I know that Tyrese Halliburton's father is allowed back into the building
in a suite.
In a suite, he won't be down on the floor getting in anybody's face. Maybe that changes some things. But yeah, I mean, the fact that they won a game with Jalen Brunson being as down as he did, Landry Shamet and DeLon Wright being on the floor as much as they were, Karl Anthony Towns being the main focus, they won a game that way when they were about to go down 3-0. That, to me, shows a lot of championship in their DNA, because that's not their bread and butter.
Yeah, I know that, but that's the way a team has to win. You know, everybody has to have a little bit of
skin. We hadn't seen it this year. Well, we never saw them win a game like that in the postseason.
Especially against good teams.
Yeah, in the postseason, we hadn't seen
it. And I would say this, that, you know, it's a really good team. I'm not going to sit here and say it's a great team. I think it's a really good team, and I do think that they have a chance to do something special, but, you know, a lot of things have got to go right, and for them, it's the unselfish nature of the players themselves that I could truly respect, especially the guys like Shamet and what's his name?
DeLon Wright.
Right, DeLon Wright, who came off the bench. I mean, that was amazing to me. They were all over the Pacers.
Yeah, and I know that, you know, we mentioned Towns a little bit, but I mean, that if you're telling me you're getting that performance from him for the rest of the series, then they're not going to lose another game. But yeah, the problem is you can't say that, because you know he's the most inconsistent guy on earth.
Yeah, but you know why he got that performance? Because Jalen Brunson was sitting on the bench.
Yeah, but how many times?
How many times did Reggie Miller say, who's going to score for the Knicks? Who's going to score for the Knicks? Well, he is.
Well, that's what he's supposed to do. Yeah, hold on a second, though. When Jalen Brunson was out for an extended period of time, it wasn't Karl Anthony. We're talking in the regular season. It wasn't Karl Anthony Towns that was carrying the opposite. It was OG Anunoby. When Jalen Brunson twice in the postseason has gotten into foul trouble and has had to sit, Karl Anthony Towns had not stepped up. So, I mean, this was not an obvious thing that he was going to play like that in the fourth quarter. We've seen more Karl Anthony Towns going to the basket, flailing arms everywhere, ball going up, bitching at officials, running back, getting in his own foul trouble, commit. I mean, this was huge.
He took a couple shots the other night that you're like, what? What are you doing?
You talking Friday or Sunday?
I'm talking about Sunday night.
Yeah.
Even Sunday night, he took a couple long three-pointers. I know that's his shot. He can make that shot. But, even Reggie Miller's like, I didn't like that shot. I mean, that's, you know, sometimes it's a little bit aggressive. But, I mean,
he needed to be aggressive going to work out in this game.
I would just say that, again, it's two things. It's the unselfish nature of the team, and it is the defense of the team that wins games for these guys, especially when other guys aren't playing that well or aren't shooting that well. And then it also helps when the Pacers aren't shooting that well.
Right, well, of course.
I mean, Pascal Siakam didn't have his game like he had in game two. You know what I'm saying?
Right. God. Yeah, I know. That was insanity, Siakam, on Friday. And that game Friday, not to go all the way back to Friday, but that was just frustrating. I could not believe that they lost that game. I was so confident that they were going to play great in that game, and I really was just like taken aback. I was still in Jersey watching a game. I'm tossing and turning. I'm like, oh my God, they might really lose this series. And everybody I talked to, except one guy on Friday, felt the same way. So maybe I should have listened to that, because generally when everybody's on the same page with a game and there's one guy going, I don't know, usually that's a guy who's right. But thank God I didn't bet it.
But again, you know, I mean, like, we've been sitting here watching this team grow for the last 2 years. And we've been watching Jalen Brunson do his thing. And, you know, again, I can't say enough about the unselfishness of Josh Hart, recognizing that something had to be done. Like, they had to do something, just change something a little bit. I mean, they got about the same amount of minutes, so that part of it doesn't matter. It's just about, you know, having the right guys on the court at the right time, playing the defense that is required in order to beat a team like this. I mean, you got to be up in their grill the whole time.
Up in their grill?
You do. And, you know, now Nesmith may not be able to make it here now.
Yeah, I know. He's questionable. I was worried about Josh Hart coming down the way he did late in the game. And then before he hit his first two free throws, he was grabbing the back of his knee. And I was like, oh, my God. But he ended up getting up and being fine. But, yeah, Nesmith may miss. And if he does play, then he's not going to be 100%. But, yeah, I mean, these guys that were the core of the team last year are still the leaders on the team, even though Towns and Bridges came in. You know, I mean, it's still Jalen Brunson and Josh Hart. I mean, these are the guys that everybody's looking to in big moments. And yet, on the line, delivering the way that they did was awesome. This is going to be great. This is what this is what you want when you get in these series. And it's sort of the games haven't gone the same way, but this is the same situation that the Knicks were in against Boston. They won the first two on the road. Then they lost. The Pacers are in the same situation that the Knicks are in. They lost game three, but that was a blowout. This obviously was a close one. And you were thinking all you had to do was just win one at home, and then you're up 3-1, and you could finish off the series. And that's what the Pacers are thinking. They're thinking, if we get up 3-1, curtains.
Well, I remember, what was the last time the Knicks won in that building in the playoffs? The other night.
Yeah.
They were like 0-9 or something in the playoffs.
So Sunday.
So Sunday night. So basically, they've changed that narrative or changed that storyline. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, if Brunson comes out and he plays like we expect him to play, and I they're the better team. I still think the Knicks are the better team. It's just a matter of, like, that first game just went awry in the last 2 minutes.
Right.
And, you know, that is something that you very rarely see happen. And, you know, and unfortunately, I think probably hung over a little bit to game two. But game three, that shows you who they are. Now, they lose tonight. You know, then that's maybe it's a little bit of a different story, but I don't think they will. I think I really honestly believe that this team is got the grit and it's got the heart to play through adversity, and it has all year long, and there's no reason to start thinking that it's otherwise now.
Yeah, one of the things that we had talked about, it's only fair now that things have gone the other way, but one of the things we talked about when the Knicks were struggling a little bit or you weren't getting the most out of them in the Pistons series early on, and it was like, oh, man, look, the Timberwolves are playing their ass off, and Julius Randle is playing great, and Karl Anthony Towns has been just kind of like a B-minus. Well, things change in a major way with that, where Julius Randle has essentially disappeared and Towns had his biggest moment in a Knicks uniform. So maybe neither one of them go to the finals. Maybe one of them goes to the finals. But that's just something. We were highlighting it the other way where Randle was playing his ass off. So I'm going to highlight it here now where Karl Anthony Towns is playing his ass off and Julius Randle's putting up 5 points in a playoff game when he was a part of their success, a huge part of it. Obviously, with Anthony Edwards as well. But yeah, this is going to be to Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and a game seven would be on Monday, June 2nd. If we get there, and I think both of us still feel like it is going to go seven.
I do. Yes, I know this from being with the Rangers all these years. I mean, it's just up and down, and it's heartache, and it's you figure, okay, now they finally got it right, and then all of a sudden something else happens. And last year it was the injuries for the Knicks. This year maybe it's the injuries against the teams they're playing against now. You know, so if Nesmith is out, that's a big injury.
Yeah.
That's a huge injury. That's a guy who ended up killing them at the end of game one.
Never seen anything like it from a guy with his, like, I mean, I've seen it from superstars. I'd never seen a performance like that from a guy who's just, he's a good player, but he's not a great player. So
but I also think it'll be interesting to see whether or not. And I think a lot of this was dependent on foul trouble for Brunson. You know, they're going right at Brunson, and he's committing fouls, and he's finding himself on the bench, you know, in the third quarter, early in the fourth quarter. And, you know, and what is Thibodeau to do? He's going to use Wright, and he's going to use Shamet. So I hope that he does it because he wants to do it, and they deserve to be on the court. Mm-hmm. As opposed to having to do it because somebody got into foul trouble.
Right, because you don't have a choice.
You know, because you know, a lot of people were probably questioning Tom Thibodeau's coaching. You know, we've heard that a thousand times.
Oh, yeah, I mean.
And so now he benches Karl Anthony Towns in the fourth quarter of game two. I mean, that's a coach. Mm-hmm. That's a coach making a statement, right? And does the player complain? No. The player doesn't complain. Player comes out and plays better in game three. That's what you want. And then he had no choice but to put these two guys in there. And you know what he did? He didn't give them like 3 minutes. He gave them 13 and 11 minutes. That's a lot of minutes for guys who haven't played.
Yeah, you know what you say that is? Skin in the game.
They all got skin in the game. He's not using Precious Achiuwa. It's bothering me, but that's okay. I'll get over it. But that's the point. You want to have everybody to have a little bit of skin in the game. And when you tell them, you got to go out there and look, I need you to give every ounce of effort for every minute that you're on the court. And I don't care if it's on offense, but it better be on defense.
Yeah, so Neesmith game time decision questionable officially on the injury report last night.
He's got an ankle.
Yeah, and they said he had a noticeable wimp. noticeable limp through the locker room after the game. So we'll see, but that could be a huge one.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Jerry Recco is here. We just missed one another in Jersey. We tried to hang out several times. It didn't work out, but next time, Jerry, we'll spend some quality time with one another, won't we?
Yes, we will.
Next time I'm down in Jersey.
It is not impossible. I was there Thursday. I was supposed to play golf with you last Monday, but you canceled. I didn't cancel.
No, so. The tournament got postponed, and I had a conflict with the postponed date.
Right, which you failed to tell me until I asked you on the Friday. We're good for Monday? Oh, no, I canceled. So it's not always just me, Boomer. Sometimes you have things, too, that come up, and you have to cancel.
I was available the week before.
So was I.
And it got postponed.
Right. And then you told me, you gave me the new date.
And I had a conflict.
Understood.
Okay.
But you canceled. I didn't. It happens to everybody.
Not as much as it happens to you, that's for sure.
Maybe, but it does happen to everybody. I was all set to play last Monday.
But it happens a lot to you.
And then you were walking out Friday at 10:05. Boomer, we're good for Monday. No, I had to cancel. Oh, okay. Thanks for the notice.
It's not that I had to cancel. Jackass. I had a conflict.
I have conflicts too, which is why I cancel. Like, there are some people that cancel and just sit home and watch TV because they don't want to do things.
Right.
There are other people that other things pop up and they have to cancel. They're called conflicts.
Yeah.
What happened with you?
Do you know anybody that falls under that last category of just wanting to sit at home watching TV?
I don't.
Al Hughes?
Well, no. But he doesn't cancel for that. But I'm just saying.
Okay.
But he does like to sit home and sure.
Right. He just doesn't agree to anything. He doesn't cancel. He just doesn't agree to anything, which is different.
I was all in for dinner Thursday night. Enjoyed myself. It was a great time.
Yes.
We weren't rushed. We were there for what? Almost 7:30. It was great.
Yeah, I feel like Jerry does like doing stuff.
I do like doing things.
He wasn't wiggling at anything and just stuff cropped up. It's fine.
I am annoyed, though. I don't know why I didn't think to make a tea time for a Saturday morning.
That's all right. It's okay.
That was silly.
I needed to get home anyway.
Yeah, I know.
Fly into that, with no traffic leaving Neptune City, back to Long Island. It's amazing how quick you can get places when there's nobody on the roads and there's no construction. What normally takes you 3.5 hours takes you 1 hour and 40 minutes.
Even Allie said the same thing.
Oh, like, special. I enjoyed that more than anything, I think. Was just driving in no traffic from Jersey to Long Island.
Yep.
All right, Jerry, what's happening over there?
Well, man? We are brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. So you've got game four tonight. Big game with the Knicks down 2-1. I thought this was interesting, considering the fact that the Knicks came back on the Celtics, not once, but twice, being down a whole bunch in Boston and won games, that this was the take Charles Barkley had on TNT Sunday night with the Knicks down, down 13 at the time.
First two games were really good games, and now this game is pretty much over. This is a wrap because the Pacers, the Knicks can't play fast and beat the Pacers, but they're down 13, so they got to play fast. They're going to get ran out this damn building.
Like, I thought that was weird. And then, of course, they do come back and they wind up winning the game.
Especially means the Knicks have come back. The Pacers have come back. Everybody's come back. And just for him to just think that that's not possible is crazy.
Very strange. You had a bunch of conference calls with the Knicks yesterday. This was Tom Thibodeau, just loves this team.
When you're with a team, you want to maximize all the opportunities that you do get. And you want to try to get the most out of your group. And I think each day when you have a committed group, that's what you enjoy. You enjoy the challenge of it all.
And then Jalen Brunson, so he didn't offer this up. He was asked the specific question, what would it mean for Tom Thibodeau to finally get to the NBA Finals? And this is how he answered it.
Watching this man work tirelessly day in and day out, 364 days out of the year. He maybe takes one day off. It would mean a lot.
He's not married, right, Tibbs?
I don't know.
But here's the thing.
I'm not sure.
That should just tell all Tom Thibodeau haters, just your best player loves his coach.
I agree.
I mean, in the NBA, you know how hard that is to make happen? I mean, that's all you have to listen to. I'm So many people, not so many, I mean, they're the loudest among us are the ones that go right after the coach immediately. He doesn't make any adjustments. He got out-coached by this guy, got out-coached by that guy. Why? Because his star has a horrendous game?
Yeah.
I mean, God almighty.
Well, here was his star.
By the way, just before, because you asked the question, here's AI overview on Tom Thibodeau being married. Tom Thibodeau has never been married. He was engaged to a woman named Debbie while in graduate school at Salem State, but the engagement was called off 6 weeks before the wedding. He broke off the engagement because he felt he couldn't pursue his basketball dreams with the required dedication and also be married.
Well, there you go. He's a basketball lifer. That's what he is.
Married to the game, they say, Jerry.
Yeah. And here is Brunson, exactly what you're just talking about, Boomer. What about the constant criticism of Tibbs?
There's always going to be a lot of noise, positive or negative. And so it's all about what we think, it's all about what we do, all about the work we put in and day out, and trusting, obviously, our journey. And so regardless of what people say, we're always going to have each other's backs.
And they certainly have through these this postseason. So, and here was Landry Shamet. This was from Sunday night, just talking about Karl-Anthony Towns in that fourth quarter.
Of course, he carried us home there at the end. You know, we put ourselves in a position to be close, and he... did his thing on the way to the stretch.
And dominated, as we know, and they trail 2-1. Aaron Nesmith questionable with the ankle injury for this game for tonight in Indiana. If they win, they'll come back all even with a ton of momentum for game 5 at Madison Square Garden in a couple of nights. The other series in the West, you had the Thunder and the T-Wolves. Minnesota, they did win game 3, as we know, got to within 2-1. They were looking to get even in their set. Unfortunately for them, that was not to be the case.
Shea with 120 to play. Kicks left wing, Dub open. Snaps off a rainbow three. In there! Cha-ching and J-Dub off their bunny ball. Oh, baby! 34 for Dub, a playoff career high. Shea's got 10 assists. Thunder back up 7.
And that was Thunder Radio with the call. They'd wind up holding off Minnesota to win 128-126. Jalen Williams had 6 threes at 34. But Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, 40 points, 9 rebounds, 10 assists.
12 of 14 from the line.
Pretty good.
He gets the line a lot, and he makes his free throws.
Here was Williams, how he did it so well offensively.
Just making quick decisions, being ready to shoot, being ready to play. I think my defense got me in the game as well, but just being ready to play off of my team and trust each other to make the right plays and make shots.
Not a good shooting night for Anthony Edwards or Julius Randle. Randle had just 5 points. Here was Edwards. Pretty easy to see what happened tonight.
They outplayed us, out-rebounded us, got more than 50-50 balls. They wanted it a little more. They went back to how they was playing game 1 and 2, just in a gap, super, super heavy.
And so now the Thunder up 3-1 and can close it out in game 5 back home at OKC. And also there's, I'll pull some of the audio. I see headlines and articles written about, I guess, Doris Burke said some stuff.
Yeah, she talked about
the French and Germans not liking
each other. French and Germans not liking each other. So that was.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, Rudy Gobert and
Isaiah Hartenstein.
Yeah, Hartenstein.
So. Got it. Okay. Well, I will see what that's all about.
Hartenstein's German, Rudy Gobert yapping back and forth about how they don't like each other. She said, no history, but I think they don't like each other.
That's it? That was it?
That's all it was, yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right, the Yankees played in Anaheim last night, a later start as they were taking on the Angels. There was not a ton of offense in this game, but there was one big hit.
Hope you try to pick up at least one run here with a fly ball at the very least. Next pitch. Swung on, drive to center field. Slicing drive. Going back, Taylor. It bounces off the fence. Scoring is Grisham. Judge right behind him. Belly's flying. He's going to score. Anthony Volpe. A 3-run double in the Yankees. Expand the lead to 4-1 here in the fourth inning.
And they would win 5-1. Dave Sims with the call here on the Fan. That was kind of it for the offense. You had a bases loaded walk. There wasn't a whole lot going on, but they win the game. They've won 14 of 19 as they continue to win a lot. 33-20 on the season after the Rockies beat them Friday night.
Yes.
You said that's why they play the games. Well, Colorado won Friday and almost Sunday, too. They wound up holding them off 5-4. But the Yankees did win that series, and they take the first
one. It's like the White Sox. Like, you knew the White Sox were going to blow this game yesterday to the Mets. You just knew it.
As it kept going on and on.
Yeah, you just knew eventually the Mets would, they left a lot of guys in runners in scoring position. But you just, at the end of the day, losing teams find ways to lose.
Yeah, of course. Well, here was Volpe on the at-bat for the double.
Just want to get something I can handle and do the job and get it up. He threw me one. I took advantage.
And then you had Ryan Yarbrough.
Like that voice.
Yeah, I mean, it's very Garrett Cole-like, that voice.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
them two having a conversation. Here's Volpe on Yes Again on Ryan Yarbrough. Starts six innings.
It's amazing. I don't think anyone's really surprised just because we faced them on the other side, and it's not a fun at-bat. So he's a bulldog, and every time he goes out there, we have so much confidence.
That bulldog Ryan Yarbrough. Here he was on his success.
I think it's just been, you know, been having a really good approach, talking with the pitching staff and with Wells about, like, just great game plan of just really mixing speeds, keeping them guessing up there, and, you know.
And it worked out. And now tonight you've got Carlos Rodon against Ty Anderson on the Fan. This says first pitch 9:38. So I imagine coverage start around 9 o'clock. Yeah, they got one of these weird start times. But the Yankees, we got the AL East falling apart around them. The Red Sox lost again. The Rays, I think, are in second place now at like 500. Now a 5 or 6 game lead atop the AL East. As for the Mets, they still trail the Phillies by a game and a half in the NL East. But yesterday, indeed, it was a game of not much offensively. The White Sox couldn't add on. They had that one run. And then you had the sac fly in the eighth inning from Juan Soto to tie the game after the Mets had squandered a couple of opportunities with runners on third and less than two out. And then in the ninth inning, you had Tyrone Taylor lead off the inning with a big double. And then a couple of batters later, it was Francisco Lindor.
Swinging a high fly ball to right field. That's going to win it. Tauchman back. He's at the edge of the track. He makes the one-hand catch. Tyrone Taylor tags at third. Comes down the line to score. Put it in the books. A long sacrifice fly by Francisco Lindor gets the job done.
Yes, it did, and they win 2-1. That was high. I'm Howie.
Hi, Rose. I'm Howie Rose.
Odyssey Radio. Mets 33-21 with the win. This was Lindor on being the hero again.
I come up in those situations. I have good hitters in front of me. They got on base. They made it easier for me, and then I got great hitters behind me as well. So
it worked out for him again. And Tyrone Taylor is the one that started this whole thing off with the double that the center fielder almost caught but did not. Here was Taylor.
It was a good pitch. I was just trying to see be on time for a fastball up close to me, and I just got put a good swing on that sweeper.
Yeah, I would say so. Almost looked like a home run. Even Beatty looked like hit a home run, I thought, in a couple of innings prior. And then the Lindor sack fly looked like a home run as well. But the ball stayed in the park. Did you see the... I didn't see this. Al brought this to my attention. There was a section of furries there yesterday.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, usually see that. The furry convention was in Pittsburgh every single year. So that's why I'd seen them at PNC Park a ton. But this was surprising to me that the furries showed up there yesterday.
A bit odd.
Yeah. But they're out there.
They are out in left field.
I don't understand, but hey, to each his own, I suppose. Furries for everybody.
Whatever turns you on, Jerry.
Yeah, that doesn't. That's kind of a way. I said to Al, like, if I had seats there and that's next to me.
Yeah, I'm complaining to somebody.
I'm not complaining, but I got to
go. No,
move.
I am. I'm, I can't. These are just,
I'd be distracted.
I can't do this.
It's just odd. Anyhow, Clay Holmes, by the way, allows the one run over 5 2/3. Edwin Diaz did get the win. You've got Tyler McGill making the start tonight on 880 AM Mets Odyssey Radio at 7:10. The Mets, as we mentioned, 33-21 now on the season. Yeah, I did not realize until the series began that the Hurricanes have been so bad in the conference finals.
Yes.
And then, of course, they lose the first three games to the Panthers. So they do win yesterday. They snapped a 15-game losing streak in the conference finals. 3-0 was the final game that was closer than 3-0. Here was Rod Brindamore on finally getting that monkey off his back.
You know what? I didn't even think about that, but that's nice. I mean, it means so like nothing to these guys because half of them aren't here, and you know. But it's been a story, so yeah. It's nice to not have to talk about that.
Not have to deal with that anymore, but they are still down 3-1 in that series, so things not going their way. You've talked about how good Florida is, and Florida continues to be that good. You've got game 4 for the Oilers and the Stars tonight with Edmonton up 2-1, and this Caitlin Clark injury. This quad injury has the WNBA, yes, all upside down. Yes, uh-oh is right, so we'll see what happens there.
Is Brendan Shanahan going to be the Islanders GM here?
Matthew Darche.
Yeah, so it didn't happen. I was all fired up about that.
Yeah, well, that mean he can't come, you know, at some point.
And then but, be like a president of
or something. It sounds like this Matthew Darche is going to have a complete say over the total hockey operations.
Okay.
So he was the assistant GM down in Tampa. So he's got a lot of decisions to make right out of the gate. And so he's going to have what I would say is a fresh palate. And supposedly he's going to have a lot of say. So we'll see what he does. And if he follows what they did down in Tampa, how could they go wrong?
That's right.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
Hi, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. If you want to talk some Knicks, lines are open, 888-808-1019. I dodged a huge bullet up until this point. I will knock on wood right here. But you know how the neurovirus has been a thing with this show?
Yes.
So my entire family, wife, two daughters, goes down to visit some in-laws in Florida over Memorial Day weekend. So down there, Sabrina, unfortunately for her, it was tough, felt bad for her, neurovirus while she was down there.
You know who else had the neurovirus? You played golf with him last week.
Man, I played...
played a lot of golf last week. I know how many
Dr. Eric Freeman?
No.
Adam Schefter?
No.
You?
No.
Wally Szczerbiak?
No.
Cal Clutterbuck?
Yes.
Wow. Is he doing okay?
I think he is.
That's a tough one.
I saw him, and I think he's okay.
Yeah, that was... so I'm sitting there, like, half of me is like, oh, man, I feel really bad for Sabrina. The other half of me is like, man, now I'm not getting the neurovirus.
The last thing that Cal had eaten since I saw him next...
Yeah?
...was the gnocchi.
The gnocchi?
Gnocchi, yes. This is the last...
That's great. Oh, that thing just knocks you on your ass.
It does.
I'm telling you. So hopefully it's like it's over and like there's not an incubation period situation that's going on and then they come back today and then all of a sudden here we go. But man, oh man, oh man. When I heard that, it's like I had to pretend that I was like really upset about it, but I was thinking, well, I don't have to worry about this now. I don't have to worry about bringing it into you or any of that stuff because we had a long history of the neurovirus on this program. So much so that I ended up puking in this garbage pail right next to me because I came in with it one day. And speaking of illnesses, just a quick shout out to we almost lost Stephen Waldron, apparently, with his appendectomy. I mean, yes. I've never seen more... sympathy grifting, I believe it's called, than I saw with the Stephen Waldron appendectomy.
Well, we wish him the very best.
We do.
Want him to do well, but, I mean, you don't send out, like, a sad text message saying that you had an appendectomy on Memorial Day.
And expect sympathy. It's just not happening.
You're not getting it.
Yeah, and then also, on top of it, you know, Sean Kennedy sends pictures of Stephen in the hospital. It's like, we want him to do well, and we're happy that he's healthy, but, I mean, hey... People go through stuff, right?
People go through a lot of stuff.
He's alive.
And by the way, an appendectomy is a normal situation. Like,
yeah.
You know, that's not an abnormal surgery, especially, like, obviously he wasn't feeling well, ran to the hospital like he should have. They realized that it was the appendix, and it had to come out.
Yeah.
I mean, all right, it happens.
This is an 1897 where it would have killed him, you know?
Exactly.
I think they've performed plenty of them. So Stephen... get well, but also get a grip, will you, for God's sakes?
I mean, to send out that text message on Memorial Day.
Yeah, looking for sympathy. I mean, did he not know? Did he not realize the calendar? Was his appendectomy just throwing him off that much? But anyway, get well, Stephen. So this is something I feel like that's going to piss you off, but I'm not sure or not, because sometimes you surprise me with these things.
Okay.
So... Pablo Torre, who was still all over the Jordan Hudson, Bill Belichick thing, he rented that Airbnb where the footage came from of Bill Belichick walking outside shirtless. Remember that whole thing?
Yes.
And it was caught on the Ring camera?
Yep.
So he wanted to see where the footage came from as he's just doing this breathless reporting on it. And listen, I'm talking about it and I'm interested, so I can't really criticize him for going in depth with this because he's the one doing it and making all the headlines. So the owners apparently are allowed to... record this footage and then distribute it under the rules of Airbnb.
Really?
Yeah. That they're allowed to. How is that possible? I mean, and that's so...
That's why Airbnb sucks.
I guess. But it's... So the owner said that they thought that he was either a coke dealer or she was a prostitute. So they had this footage. I mean, clearly she's... Well, you know, they're nowhere near... either one of those things,
right?
But they're just making assumptions about them and able to record them and put it out where they want to put it out because they own the place.
Yeah, that doesn't feel right.
No,
that doesn't feel right at all. That's why I would imagine I've never done an Airbnb
in my life, and I'm never going to do it again unless they change. I mean, God, what? There are cameras inside too.
There could be.
God, that's wild.
That would be the thing that I would always worry about. What's inside the house?
Yeah.
Or the apartment or whatever you're renting. I mean, that I don't know. You know, who knows? There's probably some sort of fine print at the bottom of the agreement that nobody reads. And the next thing you know, you could walk in there and there's probably video cameras all over the place.
I mean, think about there's got to be a whole army of sickos out there that have Airbnbs and like hidden cameras in places and are just watching this footage.
The other reason why you may want a camera just to see if anybody's doing any damage to your property, I guess that would be a reasonable explanation, but it's not something that you would be comfortable with.
Well, I mean, yeah, but for years and years and in most places now that you rent, I mean, like if you rent a beach house, let's say, and, you know, the owners come in and after the last group comes in, they clean it up, they take a look, and then once the new group comes in, if there's some damage, then they know that it's them. You don't need a camera in there.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what security deposits are for.
But I would say the Ring doorbell is something that's pretty common now.
Yeah.
For pretty much everybody.
Yeah, no, that's, yes.
And so, and if it's a, if somebody has a Ring doorbell and they're renting out their apartment or their house or whatever, that thing's not going to be turned off. That's going to be turned on. That's going to be left on.
That's fair. But then to send that footage out or release that footage for people to have, that is the issue. The Ring doorbell's fine.
That's a real violation of privacy.
It is.
100%.
But apparently Airbnb, you can do that. So that is a... That's a warning to people out there that that stuff can happen.
Well, so Pablo Torre went to this place,
yeah.
And mm-hmm. He rented it?
He rented it, yeah. He rented it. So
did he have a good time?
I don't know. I'm not sure if he had a good time or not. But yeah, he is all in on us. Like this is his Mona Lisa. This Jordan Hudson Bill Belichick thing, because he's doing a... You know, he's got a podcast that I'm sure was doing okay, but now, like, this is the thing. Like, this is what Aaron Rodgers was to Pat McAfee. Like, Pat McAfee's doing a real good, entertaining show, and here comes Aaron Rodgers to put it over the top with all the eyeballs on it.
Yeah,
and get
but I
more
mean,
people
those guys
in.
Are buddies, though.
But what? What do you mean?
I mean, Aaron and Pat McAfee are buddies, and I understand what Pablo Torre is doing to Bill Belichick and Jordan Hudson is really... It's not the same. It's not apples to apples.
But my point is that this is the thing. It's not the same situation, but this is the topic and the person and the thing that is now everybody.
His thing,
you know, yes. That's putting them over the top. Let's go to Frank, who's calling from Staten Island. What's going on, Frank?
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good, man. What's up?
Hey, so I've stayed in plenty of Airbnbs and actually own one myself down in Aruba. And it's actually against the Airbnb platform to have cameras inside the apartment or house condo, what have you.
That's good.
You can have them outside, like the Ring doorbell or a camera like by your front door so you know who's going in or out. But it's against the law, against their rules, and you could get kicked off the platform. Now, with that said, obviously there are losers who will put cameras hidden inside the apartment, but it's probably very rare. Again, most people would rather have me come than watch people naked in the shower, I would think.
Yeah, see, that's tough, man.
Yeah, it's very tough.
I mean, there was one time that I stayed in Airbnb is when I booked that trip to Nashville, like, last minute, and the hotel rooms were all booked up because it was the... Winter Classic or the outdoor game that Nashville had.
Okay.
So it was like last minute, I'm like, I want to go. And just like every hotel room was booked. So I booked an Airbnb. It was fine. But I wasn't thinking.
Of course you weren't.
Cameras and stuff. I wasn't thinking about that at all. Now, luckily, I wasn't doing anything but, you know, snoring and eating. But, I mean, that is a tricky situation. That never would have even crossed my mind that there'd be secret, but I'm oblivious to stuff like that. I guess you got to assume everybody's a pervert. I guess that's what you have to assume.
100%. You assume the worst and hope for the best, and maybe you bring in some sort of detection device.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, now I'm going to just, if I ever, anywhere I go now, I'm going to be looking at cameras everywhere. I mean, in here. We got cameras in here.
Of course we do.
This is crazy.
Yes.
Who's watching us?
Let's go, Stephen Waldron.
Stephen Waldron, yes. In his hospital bed with his bedpan. Let's go to Henry in Queens. Wants to talk some Knicks with us this morning. What's up, Henry?
Yes. How you doing?
Great, right, Henry. What do you got?
What's happening?
Okay. Listen, I called because there's something wrong. I've been a Knicks fan for a long time. I'm 60 years old, and that coach need to go. I called you last year, and I asked you. I said, Randall, I just said my opinion. Randall had to go, and that coach had to go. And I asked you, why is the coach standing there folding his arm with that look on his face like he's mad at the world? You told me that he has a sourpuss face.
He does.
Right?
He does. That is true.
So,
yes, can't argue that.
Yes,
yeah.
He does.
That's what you told me, mm-hmm. and I said, okay, I digest that. But for 5 years, this coach he messed up Derrick Rose's career. He messed up Derrick Rose's career, and he do not play his bench. I looked down there at the end of the bench. I don't even know these guys' names.
Well, you know, Henry, listen, man, you sound like a passionate Knicks fan, and hopefully they win for everybody tonight, but this is the wrong day to have those criticisms about Tom Thibodeau.
Especially after what we played from Jalen Brunson earlier.
I mean,
talking about how this guy works 364 days a year, meaning he takes one day off. He's married to the sport. He's married to the Knicks. The players really seem to like and like playing for him.
And this was the most that the bench has contributed in the last playoff game they played in the entire year. So this is now not the time to
call.
And
by the way, he also flipped starters. He started Mitchell Robinson in game three, sat Josh Hart. They ended up playing about the same amount of minutes, maybe Mitchell a little bit more than normal. And because of foul trouble, he brings in Wright and he brings in Shamet. So he did go into the bench because he probably had to go into the bench. But he also recognize, you know, he sat Karl Anthony Towns in the fourth quarter of game two.
Yeah, I mean, of course.
He's doing things that coaches normally do and or maybe not do, but I know he's stubborn. That's all anybody talks about. But if you're telling me that the captain of your basketball team loves playing for this coach in the NBA, I think you got a winning combination.
I mean, at this point, I mean, the Knicks, yeah, they're down 2-1, but they're back in the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time in 25 years. And we got a game tonight to tie up the series, and we're still getting calls of fire, Thibodeau.
All right, right. Did Patrick Ewing love Pat Riley?
Well, I mean,
did Patrick Ewing love Jeff Van Gundy?
I mean,
yes.
I mean,
yes,
they did,
yes.
But I mean, they, you know, Pat Riley also, he bumped heads with star players, but to get the best out of them.
Exactly.
You know?
But the point is that the star players love the coach.
Yeah.
And there's never been, and when Josh Hart can go to the coach and say, hey, coach, I'm good. If you want to sit me and you want to start Mitchell Robinson, you know, that's an unselfish kind of nature of this team, which is also the culture of the team, which is thankfully finally turned because Thibodeau's been here. And I think most of the players buy into it.
Yep. No, absolutely. I mean, and that's part of it as well. I mean, you know, it's used too much in sports today, but the culture is, you know, it's a direct result of the coach and the leaders in the locker room.
I mean, you got to win. You got to win because that helps. And these guys are winning. And Jalen Brunson has flourished since he got here. He has basically became a super, you know, if you don't want to say he's a superstar yet, he has become Mr. Clutch in the NBA since he got here, and he's playing for Tibbs. And that's a credit for the Knicks recognizing that, and obviously his dad being on the coaching staff already knew that.
Yeah.
And now he comes here and he becomes one of the best point guards in basketball, and he's playing underneath a coach that has gotten the best out of him. So let's fire the coach.
No.
What are we, a bunch of idiots?
It's Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network.